The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show brought to you by AIB. Lads, we're 2 days after the huge announcement of the Gooch. The Gooch is retired. I feel like we're a little bit late to this party, unfortunately.
Yeah, we are, but unfortunately the long road comes to an end for us all, and Gooch's run his course at inter-county level, but what a way to bow out, winning an All-Ireland club medal. Like, that's the way that's the stuff dreams are made of, and how you'd want to go.
And do you know, because we're all such big fans of him, it's sad that he's gone, but isn't it great that he's gone as a champion? Because he is a champion player, and wouldn't it be terrible for him to retire after, you know, just don't want the vision in my head of him chasing Philly McMahon, attacking up the field, you know, something like that, or coming on in a game or getting injured. The end image of the Gooch is celebrating with Pat O'Shea after that All-Ireland club, and that's a beautiful image for everybody to have. And I think in that way he's probably right. He could have played another year, but it's in his head, I'm done. I have that now.
Maybe at inter-county level, but he has seriously a hell of a lot to offer at club level, and he was one of the outstanding performers in the All-Ireland club final this year. And bear in mind, we're not going to see the last of the Gooch, because with the announcement of VAR a few weeks ago, you know, they will be showing a lot more club games, and there's no doubt that they will be down around Kerry showing some of the Dr. Crokes games next year. So, you know, we will see his skills for another few years to come.
The most incredible thing about the Gooch is that he stayed the marquee forward in the whole country for 15 years, Stevie. Like, you were a marquee player. You might have had 4 years at, you know what I mean, as, you know, in the top three. He's been around a long time in that category. How difficult is it to stay at that level?
Extremely difficult. And what he's done, he's come back from serious injury as well to maintain himself as one of the top performers and forwards in the game. The beauty about being from Kerry is that you know that you're going to be challenging for honours year after year, and playing in August year after year, and that to an extent probably helped the Gooch as well. But you know, he was an absolutely fantastic player, and once you're blessed with balance, creativity, you know, 2 feet, you know, strength,
good in the air,
people underestimate the strength that the Gooch had. You know, he's actually about 6 foot tall, and yes, he's slight, but he's very, very strong.
He uses his body well,
and he knows how to win his own ball. And once you're blessed with all of those attributes, you know, you're going to have a long career. And he just had the class to stay at the top. He got to know the game, you know, the further on his career he went. He became more knowledgeable. He knew the right type of movement he had to create. He knew how to create space for his teammates. And that's a fantastic, you know, attribute in any player. And he just brought players into the game. You know, his performance in the semi-final in 2013, the first half performance in particular was one of the greatest that we've seen in Croke Park of the last 25 years. And you know, that was the type of player that he was. His game, while he has a fantastic record of scoring, his game was never always about scoring. It was about being creative player and taking others into the game as well.
He's like Messi in that regard, as in he's known as a scorer, but like, I mean, if you just think Gooch is a scorer, then you're missing so much more from his game. It's those passes, it's that vision. And even like when he was corner forward, he was still a playmaker. He just got more of a spotlight when he came out centre forward because he's more obvious at it. But he playmaked a lot from corner forward.
I mean, and you're talking there about his high fielding, which sometimes goes like unnoticed. People don't really mention it. He's probably best inch for inch catcher around. Like, and for me, he was also the best hand passer in Ireland, which sounds like a strange one, but I remember this amazing pass he gave to O'Kaneda against Tyrone in that final in 2005. Caught the ball out in front of McMenamin and just wound up this big fist, and it just goes over the defence right in front of him. Like, everything he did was just so clever, and it was inch perfect. Like, he could drop the ball with his right foot, left foot or fist on like a sixpence if he wanted to.
This is the regard he was held in. Like, you have Brian O'Driscoll tweeting, you have Ronan O'Gara tweeting. he was at the top for 15 years and he was the same when he finished as when he started. No ego, no kind of cockiness, you had no kind of trouble that he was getting in. You know, I know he got in that bit drinking with Tomás O'Shea. They weren't drinking together, actually. They were drinking separately. But like that would nearly endear you to him a little bit more. Like at least he has a human side. But there was, he never changed on the field. He was always just got on with his own game. Mm-hmm. The amount of punishment he would have taken, and we're going to talk to Ryan McManaman in a while to see how that went with Ryan. But the punishment he would have taken, the double marking, like there was never a complaint about blanket defences, oh, you never get a ball. He never complained about everything. He got on with his game and that was always the gooch. And I think that's why he does transcend rivalries among counties, and every county, no matter who you are, if you're a GA fan, you like the gooch.
Yeah, absolutely. But he recognised that he was one of the top players in the country, and By having that honour and that stature, you're going to, you know, get an element of, you know, physical abuse on the pitch. You're going to get people talking in your ear, and you have to be prepared to take that. And not once have I ever seen an interview or a report after a game of the Gooch complaining about, you know, any incidents that he was involved in. He just got on with his game. He knew that that was part and parcel of being the top player, and you know, he went out and his game was all about performing and putting in, you know, performances for Kerry, performances for Dr. Crooks, and just being the messy leg GAA player that he was.
How did you get on with him? You must have met him on All-Star trips and stuff like that. Would you have got on well with him or known him well? Or
I got to know him on a few All-Star trips and a few weddings down in Kerry, whatever. I got to know a lot of the Kerry lads through international rules. I never had the honour of playing with him. The only year
he never
actually
played it, did he? One year.
He played it 1 year, 2005, and unfortunately just before the trip down to Australia I actually had to pull out of it because my wife was pregnant. So but I would have loved the opportunity to play alongside him, you know, to see if there was a bond or you know, some kind of partnership that we could form together. But he didn't take to the game, you know, it wasn't his type of game, and that was the only year that he ever participated in it. But certainly, you know, having met him on nights out, whatever, he was always you know, the life and soul of the party, and bit of banter and typical GAA player, somebody who you know, went out, was serious when he performed with silky skills and all, but when he was out to have a drink, he enjoyed himself, he let his hair down, and that's what it's all about. You have to, you know, be able to relax, and certainly Gooch over the years has learned how to deal with relaxing and playing at the same time.
He's a lot of likability, and I thought it was interesting in Darrell Shea's column, he kind of spoke about taking care of the juice, the Gooch. He was their prince, and you can't land back after a night out without having the Gooch with you, you know what I mean? There's almost like this kind of fathering element to the Kerry lads, and I can understand it because I was there for his debut in 2002. We had actually beaten Yee in the semi-final.
That's
of
right,
the Division 2 league, and Kerry beat us in the final. I was on the bench. I wasn't getting on too well with Colin Brown, but I remember us on the bench watching. He was 10 stone. He was tiny, lads, and we thought this was a bit of a joke. Where have they pulled this lad out of forever? First to God, like literally this is what we were saying. Little tiny little fella, like a whippet. And he in the corner, and we're giggling at him, thinking, God almighty, if Kerry got no one better than this. And genuinely, after 5 minutes, his first touch of the ball, he got the ball under the stand in the Gaelic grounds in Limerick, and he soloed right in along the end line. And that's a really brave thing to do when you're 10 stone, because when you're going in the end line, you're open to get nailed, because there's nowhere really to go on the infield. Mm-hmm. And he came the whole way in, and we were a big team, right up towards Fergal Byron, who's a big man, baby, and stuck it in the back of the net. And we all went, Jesus, like, I mean, and you never forget it. I always remember the first time you see a brilliant player, and I was delighted, you know, that was there for that very first debut, and it's just, it was a beautiful thing. But I can, this is the point I was trying to make, I can understand why they tried to father him, because he was just this small little young fella. But he was at a road show with us last year in the Sugar Club, and he was brilliant at it, really likeable fella, and we had a few pints afterwards, and it was myself and Paul Galvin and Rinda Barr, and I could see Galvin like just looking out for him. Gooch would go to the toilet, Galvin's watching, you know, he's watching out for the Gooch. Gooch was staying in his house that night. Gooch was actually meant to go home, but he had about 3 pints and then he was staying, you know, this usual story. But Galvin, I noticed it even before reading Darrell Shea's column, like Galvin really had his back that night. Not that he even needed it, but Galvin was just in that we're taking care of the Gooch kind of mode. Yeah. So it was it was a beautiful thing to see.
It is, and you know, you look back to the lead up to the All-Ireland Club final, and that picture that went out of Dr. Crooks last winning the All-Ireland Club, and Gooch was the mascot, and you know, you still have that image of him even amongst the Kerry squad now, that he's still a mascot type figure. But what a player, and you know, know, when you have somebody as good as him, you look out for him on and off the pitch regardless. And, you know, he soldiered with the likes of Paul Galvin and players like that for years and years. So they'll always have his back, you know, for years to come even.
Yeah, no, I don't think it'll ever go.
And what, like, what he probably, it, as much as you look out for your best players, and Kerry obviously did it, but he was so tough, he could look after himself. And I wrote a piece during the week comparing him to, like, the opposite of Roy Keane, whereas Roy Keane's legacy now seems to be people remember his toughness and his hard tackles, and they think that's all he was, where he was an excellent footballer. And I think it's the reversal of that with Colin Cooper, where he was a brilliant footballer, but we forget how tough he was and how up for it he was. Like, he had so much passion and fight in him, like, and he could mark Ryan McMenamin, he'd mark anyone. Like, remember the 2004 final, he took Pat Kelly to the cleaners, like, threw him off on at one stage. And, you know, he could really sort of hold his own out there, like, and the drive in it was incredible, but we'd nearly forget that because of how good he was.
I think we do forget it. It's almost like everything came so easily to him, like the fact that he stayed at the very top of his game for 15 years. You don't do that without being a serious maniac of a competitor.
Yeah, but it didn't actually. The first 2 years were difficult years for him because we beat them in the final and Tyrone beat them in the semi-final, and maybe that those defeats instilled a bit of drive and heart in the player, like the Gooch, because all he wanted was success at All-Ireland stage. And if you remember the goal that he scored against Mayo in the 2004 All-Ireland final, a fantastic goal, but the celebration, you know, that just showed the drive that he had to go and achieve.
He lost more finals than he won, you know. He lost 5, won 4, which is a strange enough stat when you think of the Gooch, and you even think of that Kerry team, that a lot of them. Now, Mark O'Shea would have won 5 and lost 5, but he won the one in 2014. The Gooch doesn't even count that because he reckons he didn't play a part in it, which you have to respect as well. He just didn't want the handy medal to have 5 like a lot of the other lads, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's strange to think he won 4 and lost 5. But yeah, he's obviously a brilliant player, lads, but someone who knows more than most about marking him is Ryan McManaman, and he's on the line now. Ryan, what was it like to mark him?
Yeah, it was tough anyway, and it was, you were always kept on your toes, I know, and I think probably I've said it before to anyone that asked me, you know, like from a first mark him in 03 to maybe, I think every time I marked him, you know, he continually got better, you know, and probably his movement off the ball, probably when the first time it was he was running straight lines and he was maybe an odd bit from the left and right, but then as probably see within a year as his movement have taken off and probably his appreciation of the space, you know, which probably made him more dangerous, was he was happy enough to create space for the forwards, you know, and maybe see then if I don't, it was just tough work, like.
Yeah, what was he best at, do you think?
Listen, it's probably, I think Stevie's there as well. Probably, I think what stood him apart and probably with Stevie as well, it was probably his ability to win his own ball. And then probably his ability to win his own ball and then probably being able to turn off a right or left foot, you know. And so it always, as a defender, gave you maybe, if you knew he's predominantly left footed, you could just push him on his left. But then, see, once you knew, If you had to play a right or left foot, you kind of had to step off to maybe give him that half yard because you didn't want to be turned inside out, you know. And probably he did turn me inside out a couple of times now, so it was just tough to work, you know.
Yeah, and even like Stevie as well, he was so good in the air, so marking him from the front was probably not an option. You had to be careful of that high ball as well.
Yeah, probably with the high ball, he was probably, as I said before, he was surprisingly tough, and people might have looked at him and maybe thought, you know, this boy's not, you can lay into him, whatever, and you can hit him hard and there's not going to be much to him. But he was able to take the hits and he was able to roll for it, and he probably did what every good forward did. He got stuck in, like, and he wasn't afraid to go for the 30-70 balls, you know, that the defender was fit to move, that fit to win. But probably more importantly too as well, he was able to create for others, you know, like,
yeah,
a bit like Steve there, he could roam out the field and he could pick a pass. And usually what happens in a lot of forwards cases, maybe they, I think the older they get, they, I think they kind of move into that more creative role. And I think probably he's one of them few forwards that could score 2-6 but set up 1-3 as well, you know, which is again, it was hard to mark. And I think definitely as a team, whenever we played Kerry, we were conscious of that, you know.
Yeah, don't be giving Stevie too much credit there. He lived off knockdowns from Ronan Clark. Don't be calling him creative.
I knocked the ball down too, Clarky.
But, like, I mean, you said you saw it into him, Ricey, and that was your kind of game as well. Like, did you try to do the psychological warfare battle with him as well? Did you try and get inside his head off the ball and stuff, which, you know, you're well known for?
No, and in fairness, there was never none of that. There'd been banter going on throughout the game, but there was never this. And I'd always say, the boys would say that Gooch or whatever they say, but in fairness, Gooch wasn't. He didn't hide behind it as well. Whenever he wanted to do, he would. If he scored a lock of points, I mean, in a league game, he scored a lock of points or whatever, and he was fit to tell me he scored a lock of points, and then he was. I think he scored a goal against us, maybe to put them into the lead, maybe last 5 minutes down in Killarney, and he was straight up into the face, and he was roaring. So I think we always had the banter, you know, and it was more or less, I'd say the two of them wouldn't be bosom buddies, you know. We had a rivalry, and any of the tours that we were on, you know, we'd always passed each other, and we'd have said hello. But if I had go to say maybe, was I on his Christmas card list or was he on my Christmas card list? I'd say no, like, and that'd probably it. Probably it was indicative maybe of the Throne Kerry rivalry at the time, you know, like I respected him and I got stuck into him, but like as a player, I knew probably there was no point trying to get involved in the main games with him, just because I probably knew he was probably too strong for that. But like a general banter, we'd let each other know how he felt on the field, that sort of way, like, so.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I suppose if you met on the All-Stars and you became friends, it might ruin the whole, right? Like, you wouldn't know how to act with each other on the field.
No, I think Stevie can tell you there, probably, I get on well with him with off the field as well, and probably we would have had a good rivalry, and probably I've seen him in a few All-Star tours, and we've passed each other. Like, I will always speak now, and, like, in fairness now, I get on well with Tomás O'Shea now. It's a different sort of thing, but it was just one of those things. And probably, like, we're friendly enough, whatever, we'd say hello, but probably that was about it, and we'd maybe say hello. But at the end of the day, off the field, I held no grudge against them, and then I'm not too sure. I never really asked him what he thought of me, so.
Yeah,
and I was never really too worried to find out.
We've talked already on the show there about how all the Kerry players looked out for him. Did you notice that on the field? If you were kind of going at what you call banter, you know, it's probably a bit of trash talking between the two of you. Did you notice, like, Kerry fellas coming over having his back?
I kind of noticed that a couple of times. Like, you know, I would have found it probably if you were going up the field, probably you would have got maybe. It would have been the late digs, and it would have been the tackles from behind that you would have got, you know, and then you would have got a word in the ear maybe if you're lying on the ground maybe, or a shout maybe as you're going. But no, you definitely noticed that Kerry knew that he was a talent, and he was probably their talisman, and they knew that, like all good teams, you kind of have to keep your best players protected, you know. And Throne definitely did it, and say Armagh definitely did it. You know, that if you did see one of your own probably getting a bit of banter, a bit of a challenge, you know, you would have probably did your own retribution. But no, you would have always, you'd big Dara thrown his weight there, and he tried not to miss you if you did try to launch an attack, and maybe if he knew he can get away with it. And usually it was them 50-50 ones where he was where the fist was closed, maybe as you're going to kick a ball, you know, and the ref didn't know whether it was a late tackle or a good tackle, you know, that sort of way.
Yeah, no, listen, there's clever ways of doing it. Come here, I want to clear up something with you before you go, because you're a famed trash talker, and I've talked to Stevie here, and you've marked him a few times, and he said you never trash talked him. I marked you once in a league game in Oma. Now, I played shite, you never trash talked me either. But Brendan Devaney told me you never shut up annoying him. So how did you pick and choose your victims, let's say?
Good question. No, listen, I probably marked Stevie. And I think Stevie jarred me one night where we were having a lock of pints, maybe at an All-Stars do. Well, it didn't, but
I remember that.
Do you remember that? I can vaguely mean it, you know, but it was, no, I tell you, I probably were leading up against Stevie. We were leading up, I'd say probably he was, I kind of put it in my head, right, he's going to be expecting me to be coming out. Because we played Armagh before, maybe a right few times that year, and there's always a bit of variables going on, maybe in the defence against the forwards. And and I was probably leading it, and we were just banter, as I like to call it. And then I was saying to myself, Stevie's going to be expecting me to come out full verbals with him. And I said, I come out, throw him, and just say nothing to him. And I think that's what I did. I think Stevie was even trying to get a bit of banter out of me, but I was certainly caught by surprise. So I just kind of said that, and then probably with Brendan, I kind of knew myself that if Brendan maybe, I think of mine that day, and I go for him a bit, I always like to put him on, he was B-taker or whatever, so you would always kind of say, look, you would kind of see the person himself and kind of think, if there's a chance you can rattle them. But you, Willie, I just says, no, I says, there's no point rattling this man, I'll just try to play football against him. But there was nothing really picked out. There's some days maybe you could have a bit of crack or a bit of banter with them, and then there's other days you can't. I think, like, I know with Brendan, he's a free taker, and I think he missed the first one, and then I had a word with him, and then I think he, once a forward comes back and tells you that he never missed a free the year before, you kind of say to yourself, I can make hay here with this boy here. So I eventually kept chatting on him and on them. I think then he spent more time looking, wondering what I was going to say, and I think I had gone up the field more times, and he was coming back and answering me with something that I never asked him. I said to myself, that's a good way to have him on. So he's more concerned about me, but look, there was no wild saying. I think maybe a lot of people thought I put great thought into what I was going to say this year, and it was just kind of, you kind of know the game you're in, and I think probably a lot of it kind of got blown out of proportion of what I kind of said or whatever, and they thought I trash talking would have talking about families and talking about never nothing like that, because I was always maybe just, you were just maybe trying to be psychological, especially with a free taker, you know, you can kind of annoy him or put him off. But again, like, I didn't bother doing it with Stevie because I probably knew he was too strong probably for that, and probably I'll have to give you your dues there, Willie. I can use the same. See the same lane with you, you know. So.
Well, if you're saying I'm strong now, you're really plowmossing me all together. Ricey, come here. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem, mate. I'll see you later, boys.
Yeah, Ryan McManaman changed his tactics against you, Stevie. It didn't work out too well for him, according to you.
According to me, exactly, yeah. Well, the 2005 semi-final, I believe, was one of my better games in an Armagh jersey, and Ryan did come to mark me before that game, and I think I'd maybe 3 or 4 points scored within 20-25 minutes. So Conor Gormley was quickly shifted across to me, but I was happy enough to score a goal off him, but unfortunately we end up losing by a point. We all remember Peter Canavan's last gasp free to knock us out. You know, disappointing end altogether from an Armagh point of view, but you know, the likes of Ren, when he marks you, you know, you always embrace that challenge, believe it or not. You always want to pit yourself against the best players, and if you come out on top in those type of battles, you know that you've performed at a high level.
It's interesting that the Gooch will come back at him when he does get the goal. You often don't see that on the television, but like, I mean, if somebody's in your ear a lot and you get a goal, like, I mean, the Gooch is only human. Like, trash talk is in us all to a certain degree. Like, it comes in playful manners, or comes in, did you see that, you know, or where were you for that one?
Exactly.
Like, there's player wouldn't come out with stuff like that. But in fairness to Gooch, in general, like, he wouldn't be into, you know, initiating anything like that. Like, no. Tomás O'Shea is very strong in that, saying that was definitely not something he liked doing because it threw himself off his game. Like, you wouldn't imagine the Gooch ever wanting to get involved in any of this. He mind his own business.
I don't actually think that the type of the character like the Gooch was, that it would have thrown him off his game too much, because I think he was very strong mentally, and he would be able to deal with any type of abuse thrown at him or said to him. So, you know, yes, if he got a point or a goal, you know, he paid the reward back, but there's no doubt, you know, from a forward's point of view, that's what the strong-minded characters in the game do, you know. But it's a gentle reminder to the defender that I've got one up in you here, you know, keep saying what you want to say and keep doing what you want to do, I'll just keep scoring.
Yeah, great stuff. Right, lads, we'll leave it there in the Gooch. Thanks very much, Gooch, if you ever listen to the podcast. You do work for our sponsors, AIB. You've had a brilliant career and we loved watching you. We're going to leave the last word to Paul Galvin, who told a brilliant story in the Sugar Club that I mentioned earlier on. It was a live show before the All-Ireland, and here he is telling a little story about the Gooch before the All-Ireland final against Cork.
Funny enough, I have no problem sleeping the night before. I actually like sleep. I actually remember before, Paul, we were rooming together in 2007. Before,
I came back to the room around 1 o'clock. Gucci disappeared.
We 1 o'clock in the day.
In the daytime. So the game was 3:30. This was about 1:15. So he had been up for breakfast, physio, lunch, and next thing he disappeared. And we were all, like, we had an hour to kill or whatever. I came back to the room about 1:15 and I see this little tuft of red hair under the duvet. And there's not a stir out of him. So I go, like, it's time to go. A bus is leaving. We have a team meeting and we're going to leave. And I'm getting the bag ready and there's still no life out of Gooch. The next thing, I pick up my bag and I drop it and he's... Ugh. I said, next thing, what time is it? I said, it's 1:15, Gooch. Oh, Jesus. I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. One ten. I have a few minutes yet. Fact. Stayed in bed. Didn't even stir. Like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in. Took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1:07 that day.
Derek, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
There's only one place to start when we're going to look ahead to the games at the weekends, lads, and that's Dublin-Kerry, which is turning into a major grudge match. And Kerry had a press conference on Tuesday. Usually I would like to go to press conferences, but Eamon Fitzmaurice is a bit on the Jim Gavin mould, as in he doesn't give much away. He, you know, plays his cards close to his chest. But weren't we all raging when we heard what he actually had to say? He had a few things he wanted to get off his chest. So we have the audio here. We weren't down at it, but FM 104 have given us this audio of Eamon Fitzmaurice at the press conference. So have a listen to this.
To be honest, look, normally, and I had to think about this today, because normally I just kick for touch with those kind of things, because, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, mind games or whatever, I just don't believe in it. Believe that there's a game of football to be played and you trust the referee to, you know, to get it right. But I do find it a bit worrying, to be honest, that there is a narrative out there at the moment, and I don't think it's balanced at all.
Do you think it's a professional referee? Or?
I don't know. I think supporters of their own teams are going to have, you know, the Dublin supporters are going to have blue tinted glasses, and the Kerry supporters are going to have green and gold tinted glasses, and that's the way it is. But I just think there's a complete lack of balance there at the moment. I think that the Dublin team, and it's important that this goes in, that I'm saying this, that they are a serious team that we have the utmost respect for. They're a fantastic footballing team, an attacking footballing team with brilliant players, with an outstanding manager. But make no mistake about it, they have a hard edge about them, and a seriously hard edge. Any team that wins as much as they have, if you go back to the Kerry team of the noughties, the Tyrone team of the noughties, the Kilkenny hurling team that won 4 in a row, they all had a hard edge about them. And Dublin have, going back to 2011 when Declan O'Sullivan was taken out of it, going back to the 2013 final when they were down a man basically for the last 5 minutes and they had to tactically foul to see it out, going back to the end of the All-Ireland semi-final last year when one of our players was wrestled to the ground and basically choked. So they have a hard edge. Now, so have we. And I've never made, I've never tried to paint us as being whiter than white. But what I find annoying at the moment, and I felt the reason I had to respond this evening was out of my duty to the players. that we were going into the weekend on a level playing pitch. Because my worry was it was developing into a situation like the All-Ireland final replay last year, where there was an orchestrated campaign against Lee Keegan that was effective for the All-Ireland final replay. So normally, like I said, I wouldn't open my mouth about things like that, but I feel out of my duty to the players, I had to address it this evening. I had to say that I think there's a complete lack of balance. Even within our own county, there's a lack of balance. And I just think it's unfair on our players.
Yeah, lads, Eamon Fitzmaurice there, and he's making a few very strong statements. There's loads in that. You know, this is all stemming from a piece Paul Curran wrote in the Evening Herald after the league game, and he said Kerry should be ashamed of themselves. He says whether they had them or not, but they all told us they had values. They've abandoned them completely. Now they're playing this football. I don't know, it's crazy. They've no chance of winning the way they're playing. If they come out and play football and give their young fellas a chance and play the way they played traditionally, I think they have a chance. Now, Paul Curran's writing for the Evening Herald. Like, a lot of ex-players that write for local newspapers are very parochial and they don't write objectively and they back their own.
Yeah.
But because Paul Curran's such a big name, this makes kind of national media, and the Herald is a Dublin paper. Like, that kind of stuff shouldn't really be getting out there as an opinion, because it's too blinkered and it's too one-sided. You know, it's not an objective piece. Now, we did say on the podcast that Kerry maybe were the aggressors that night, but they've nothing to be ashamed of. These things happen where, you know, you haven't beaten a team in a long time, you lay down a marker. And don't think for a second, even if Kerry are the aggressors, that Dublin are, and maybe Mrs. Morris does make this point, the narrative is out there that Dublin, and Joe Brawley doesn't help this either, that Dublin are this beacon of light that's to be held up for everyone else to copy because they play a little bit more attacking than everybody else. That doesn't mean Dublin are into all the other stuff that every other team are into, because absolutely not do you get to the level Dublin have without having that hard edge.
Yeah, and I don't understand what Curran's talking about. What values is a football carry? Played good football that night. They went at Dublin, but they played hard.
Like, and they should have beat them that night. So I don't know where he's saying they've no chance of winning playing that football. Or what is that football?
We spoke about it beforehand. You said, Willie, that they need to stick out their chest and say, we're Kerry, you're in Kerry here now. Like, that's the way every club, every county should be when someone comes down to your turf. Never mind the big lads from Dublin. Like, you need to let them know that they're there. What is wrong with that? Have they abandoned from that? They should be ashamed of themselves, I think.
Do you expect a team who have gone on such a long unbeaten run to come into your own home patch and, you know, allow them to play their free flowing football that, you know, they're quite capable of playing? Or do you get stuck into them and into their face? And that's what you've got to do. And, you know, all the top teams, even Fitzmaurice mentioned it, he mentioned Tyrone, he mentioned Kilkenny, Kerry as well. They're all teams blessed with players with hard edges. You know, Tomás O'Shea, Dara O'Shea are two players. You know, you look at the Throne team, Conor Gormley, players they got there, they get stuck into you. But they want it to win. They want it to be successful. And that's what top teams, the teams at the top do. You know, Dublin have it now. Kerry have it in their game. Kerry always have it in their game regardless. Yeah. But, you know, it's out there now, and Dublin have to get used to the teams becoming more and more physical with them, because that's one way of trying to counteract and beat them.
Yeah, but do Dublin cry a little bit? Do their ex-players in the media, is there an orchestrated campaign? Now, I thought at the time there's not, because I know Alan Brogan well and I spoke with him, and I know he would have come out that Lee Keegan's a bit rough on Connolly, and I don't think Alan Brogan is stupid enough to be part of an orchestrated campaign.
Yeah.
He's got too much kind of honour for that. But I do think that the first fella that sets that ball rolling, everyone has opinion pieces to write.
Yeah.
And if that's the debatable topic at the time. So I'm not on the side that it was orchestrated from maybe Jim Gavin. Now, I don't think Jim Gavin orchestrated. I think one or two blinkered ex-players wanted to highlight it. And then I think it became a talking point. And then I think everybody kind of started talking about it. Then it was Lee Keegan versus Connolly. And I interviewed Connolly before Christmas, and Connolly didn't give a shit what Lee Keegan. He says, that's part of the game. What do you want Lee Keegan to do?
Yeah.
Just let me run through without trying to body check me. Dermot Connolly body checks Lee Keegan just as much as the other way around.
Exactly.
So I don't really know what to think of this orchestrated thing. I think it's lazy opinion pieces that you can't actually think up of a better angle than the most obvious one that somebody lazily picked out to begin with.
I would say that there is an element of orchestrated campaigns.
Do you
going
think
on.
So?
Yeah, from ex-players, but that's it.
Amongst themselves.
Amongst themselves. There's no way, I couldn't imagine management teams or players getting involved in that type of crap. And, you know, I'm only learning or saying this from my own experience, there's no way we ever got involved in that there. If whatever went on outside of our control, we couldn't handle that. That was outside of our control. All of our main aim was trying to get performances on the pitch, and regardless of your opponents and players who you're coming up against, you've got to go and compete against them, and that's it. And Lee Keegan is the current player of the year, one of the best players in the country, and like the Gooch, there's going to be an element of, you know, stress put upon him in matches, you know, an element of physicality abuse, and he's got to learn to deal with that, and he has dealt with it, you know. So he moves on, he takes it like a man and moves on. Jim O'Connolly the exact same. So, you know, these campaigns are out there, there's no doubt about it, but Eamon Fitzmaurice to an extent is probably right to highlight it as well, because if it is unbalanced, you know, it can't be allowed.
Yeah, and I think he does have a point of highlighting this, because the tactical fouling, for example, I remember before the Mayo All-Ireland, was it against Donegal, Joe Brawley went on talk about Mayo tactically fouling, because Mayo did against remember in Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final that year, 2012, they ran up such a big lead that Dublin were coming back and they were just dragging them down all over the place. Now that's fair enough, like, I mean, that's a natural thing to do if you're nearly going to blow a lead, you just don't want to give away a goal. But remember in the All-Ireland final in 2013 when Dublin beat Mayo and there were a couple of points up or 1 point up, they dragged Mayo players down on the counter-attack. Yeah. I remember Kevin McManaman specifically, and I remember in my old job I went to one of the hospitals Dublin were visiting, and I got hold of Jim Gavin and I asked him about this. I said, you were cynically fouling Mayo at the end of the game. We weren't. I says, but you were. Yeah. He says, we were not. These things happen when you're tired in a game. I says, you were pulling them down. And he wouldn't admit this. But there's no narrative out there that Dublin do this kind of thing, or Dublin will wrestle you to the ground and maybe get you in a headlock where you can't breathe. You know, like, I mean, they've got Philly McMahon, who'd take your life in a second. And, like, in fairness to Philly, he never complains when it gets it the other way around. So, but he's a hard man. They've got plenty of players that will do the dark arts, and without those players you probably won't win in All-Ireland. The Ryan McManamans who we spoke to, you need those type of lads.
It's quite simple.
But don't whinge about Lee Keegan. Yeah. When you've got Johnny Cooper tormenting his man off the ball, you've Philly McMahon tormenting his man. Rory O'Carroll used to be terrible for it as well. You can't complain with one side, ex players, whinging about Lee Keegan when your lads are doing the very same thing, and Mayo aren't whinging about that.
Yeah. Fact of the matter is, those teams are the top teams in the country, and they all have players that master the dark arts. Quite simple. Dublin, Kerry, Donegal, Tyrone,
they
Mayo,
all have them, yeah.
Every single one of those teams have them, and they wouldn't be at the top table if they hadn't got them. And that's quite simple. You can't win anything with a team full of nice players. It's quite simple.
Paul Beelan now is in the Examiner talking about Eamon Fitzmaurice, and they have it, like, it's maybe reporters are ringing these Dublin lads looking for the response, but they're only too happy to take the call, and it feels like now there's maybe you're right, Stevie, like, I genuinely think there's no way it's coming from Jim Gavin or Dublin camp, but I do think you're right, this could be texts around. What are you writing about this week? We'll get this. We might go for, you know what I mean? It could be amongst themselves.
Yeah, Stevie's right there. It reminds me of that Kevin Cassidy book. Well, Declan Bogue's book, but Kevin Cassidy's in it talking about how the players went to Jim McGuinness to say, we need to be nastier on the field. And they brought in this American football example, this guy who's the loveliest fellow off the field, but he went down and he switched to become this animal. And they recognised that. And that's how, it's not why he got to the top, but it's part of the reason where they switched this flick, and they just went for it then when they're on the field and became different people. But this idea that, you know, the carrier somehow they've strayed from these values, like when they had players like Tom O'Sullivan and Aidan O'Mahony, these hard players, like
Paul
even if it's more like Galvin, these players who would give it to you, like this.
They were brought in, O'Mahony and Galvin were brought in 2004 in response to Armagh and Tyrone beating them the year before. We want more combative players, and that was it, because Paulie didn't pick Galvin was on the panel, and Aidan O'Mahony hadn't been on it, and they gave them that, like,
absolutely.
They actually gave them that, and that's what they were there for. Any rough stuff, we're in it, and we now they had that hard edge. Do you know, they had these obvious, because the O'Shea's were football. Now Dara actually got a very hard edge towards, maybe he always had it, Tomás and Mark not as much kind of cynical stuff.
Tomás had it back in 2000. I can remember vividly that he took Cahill O'Rourke out of the All-Ireland semi-final
with his shoulder
when Cahill run a mock the first day around. You know, he realised that Cahill was one of our main players, one of the playmakers in the team. You know, we've got to put an end to his contribution here, and that was done. But, you know, that's fair enough, that's within the rules of the game, and you know, we got away with it, and Absolutely, I have no problem with that whatsoever, because at the end of the day, if we wanted to be successful, we should have been identifying the Kerry players and doing that, but maybe at that stage we are a wee bit naive.
Yeah, well, you well taught, you got taught a lesson that day and you learned from it anyways. I can tell you that much. But going on the mind games, lads, because this is kind of a feature throughout the divisions, Colm Kelly and Liam Kearns have a bit of a tit for tat here before the Division 3 final, and Colm Kelly is not happy about Kearns' assertion that Loud were cynical team. So this is almost the same kind of thing again, only at a lower level. And he's saying things like that are pretty petty, to be honest, he said in the Dundalk Democrat. All these, you get great stuff in the local papers, you know. He said, we got a bit of flack in the press the last time for being cynical. I just find it laughable, especially when their full forward, Michael Quinlivan, was black-hearted for pulling Pádraig Smith down on the 21-yard line for a definite goal. So we've mind games starting to come into the GAA, lads. Usually I like to stick to the football, but I thought today would be a nice opportunity to analyse what managers are starting to say. And it's almost like this, let's get in the referee's head, let's not let them psychologically get one up on us, like, and all this kind
they're
of influence.
They're all taking a leaf out of Jose Mourinho's book.
Ferguson, yeah, exactly. That is this maybe creeping in? And can referees, I do genuinely think that the referee was influenced by the Lee Keegan campaign last year, because when he pulled down Dear McConnelly, and we debated whether it was a black card or not,
he couldn't have done,
but there was no doubt he was putting him off. After, like, I knew looking at it, there is no way Keegan's getting off of this, no way. In, you know what I mean? And in my head it was because this was built up to such a big thing, the referee couldn't look at that objectively and say, you know, it wasn't. Because, like, looking back on it, like we debated, you could make a strong case for both, you know, that maybe he didn't, that Connolly made the most of it, but there was no way he wasn't getting
He certainly wasn't getting off at it. Not but the publicity that was in the media in the lead up to that particular match. There was no way that that referee was going to keep the black card in his pocket and waive, you know, the right for Lee Keegan to continue to play in that match.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Just on more managers' comments, that's Banty, the wily old fox that he is. He's taken a different kind of line, and he's talking Westmead up. It's kind of the old school line, you know.
Yeah, that's
it's
certainly old school. Typical GAA, you know.
Yeah, he says, now this is after Westmead hammered, okay, it's not after the match, but this is this week, but this is the context of Westmead hammering Wexford's pub, you know, second team or whatever. Westmead have been head and shoulders above every team in the division. They're an exceptional side. Unlucky that Dublin have been in Leinster to deny them the provincial title. He told the Wexford People newspaper, more local goodness here. It's fair to say they've been the second best team in Leinster over the past two seasons. They play a quality brand of fast, open football, attacking from deep, and have got players behind the ball. So they're playing defensive and fast and attacking. You can't build Westmead up any further.
So you know what the Banty's telling the Wexford team?
These lads are
behind closed doors. That's all bullshit, lads. Let them buy into that there, and we'll do what we have to do.
But he's also telling everyone else, like, you know, that's a much better team. So if I lose, it's not really my problem. Like, so don't come to me. So Westmead can only lose in this scenario.
Yeah, I think it's funny when you throw that kind of stuff out there, as if Westmead are stupid enough to go, whoa, they think we're great. Yeah. You know, it's so silly. There's no doubt about that. Just quickly, lads, we'll talk about this Kerry Dublin game, because, like, I mean, the big talking point is Jack Barry and the good job he did on Fenton the last day. Now there's confusion with me about whether he was marking Fenton for that long the last day, or whether we're switching over and back, but definitely Brian Fenton's influence on the game wasn't what it always had been. David Moran was outstanding, and Jack Barry looks like he's going to be a nice foil. I think it was did Adrian Maher start the last day and Jack Barry didn't? I think maybe he could have been rested, but that was Jack Barry, you'd say, is guaranteed to play and play some part and maybe get inside Fenton's head, because I have a feeling Kerry think that Moran can have Fenton's measure in the air. They don't fear him as much in the air, but Moran on the ground on Fenton is where Fenton has the advantage. But Jack Barry might come across during general play and kind of Moran has him for kickouts, but after that once you tracking him, you know, maybe that's the best way to do it.
It's a massive game for Fenton, because for the last 2.5 years he's been destroying everyone, I think, and I always said I don't think anyone can touch him, but the last two Kerry games now, it has been, like, we argued about Moore and Fenton last year, but it was the one game that he didn't dominate. He didn't, like, completely run the show. And now, like, down in Kerry there a couple of weeks ago, Moore was the main man. And that sort of stuff can get on their player's head then as well. Like, you know, he maybe he's gone to this game thinking, this boy's got the better of me, then he might try and exert himself too much. It's sort of what McManaman's saying then, once somebody's thinking something, then you know you have him or whatever. Like, so it's sort of mind game for those two midfielders going on. Maybe Moran thinks, I've got the beating of this man, he's going to go do the same thing again.
Yeah, maybe it is. And it's actually, like, it's a brilliant rivalry building up here, lads, because these, Mayo need to get back to that pitch of it where they're not quite, I think they will for the summer. But Donegal Walsh spoke during the week and he said that it's not a rivalry until we start beating Dublin, because a rivalry is supposed to work both ways. Both now, it is a rivalry, but Kerry, like, they really have to. I actually, you could make an argument to say maybe Kerry weren't too concerned about making this league final against Dublin, and now all of a sudden they're against them again, and you wonder, do they even want this?
Yeah, well, they certainly don't want to be getting beat anyway, that's for sure. But I would love if, you know, in full view of a big audience this weekend in Croke Park, you know, that Mourne and Brian Fenton are pitted against each other. That's the type of duel that you want to be looking at and seeing who can come out on top. It would remind you actually of the likes of Brian Mullins and Jack O'Shea in years gone by.
Yeah,
you know, that type of duel and two top players going against each other to determine who is the best midfielder, because for me they are the two outstanding midfielders in the country. And you know, to have it all, they're blessed with ability in the air, they're blessed with ability on the ground, they can go forward, they can get scores, they can create, and they work back. And you know, I would just love an opportunity to see them mark each other, to see who can come out on top.
Yeah, I think definitely in the air they will, there's no doubt about that, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to go to those games at the weekend, and I might as well tell you now, I think we're going to have two football podcasts on Monday. So we're going to have Division 3 and 4 in one podcast and Division 1 and 2 in another podcast, because there's absolutely no way we could get everything into one, it would just be impossible. So we'll let you know more about that on Monday. Alright, up next, lads, we'll do some predictions.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Meath at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
AIB, backing club and county.
Prediction section, lads, and the only place to start on the prediction section, if anybody's still listening to this slot, is we did a league preview, the three of us. We've been soldiering away right throughout the league, and we've been taking knockback after knockback on our accumulators. I don't think anybody's been getting accumulators up. The league has been unpredictable. It's been absolutely brilliant. Everybody will agree with that. But we did do predictions at the start of the league, the Thursday before the league started.
Don't be reminded.
We ran through the divisions, and I have the predictions here in front of me. So you'll be glad to hear this, lads. So we'll start with Division 4. And it's that. Oh, Stevie, I'm only after noticing something here, actually. Right, well, I went for Wexford and Westmead. I went for Wexford and Westmead. Conan, you went for Wexford and Westmead. Congratulations. And Stevie MacDonald went for Limerick and Wexford. So you went for Limerick, who bloody lost to Carlow, letting my accumulator down in, I think, week number two.
Yeah.
So you didn't actually choose the team Westmead, which won the division very, very convincingly.
Second best team in Leinster.
Second best team in Leinster. And if Banty would have heard that, he would have pulled you up on it.
Yeah.
So that's it, lads.
I'll leave it there.
So, like, we can't really brag, Conan, because Wexford and Westmead were the unbackable favourites. Give you a little bit of credit for at least having the guts to go outside the box. So now we'll go to Division 3, where it gets a little bit more embarrassing, especially for me here. The finalists I went for are the two teams to get into the final, obviously they're the finalists, and get promoted. I went for Armagh and Laois. Went for Armagh and Laois, and Laois to win it whole thing out. So, you know, that's very embarrassing. And for relegation, I went from Antrim and Longford. So I got one of the two of them. And in fairness, at least Longford were a decent shout. They were down in 4 points in the last few minutes. Or the last day of the league. Conan, you went for Armagh champions and Laois finalists against them. So Laois and Armagh as well.
Well,
you should have the courage. You should have the courage of your own convictions.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Division 2 in a minute, and we didn't really go with your assertion. We'll get to that in a minute. So that was it. And relegation, you went for Antrim and Sligo. So you went, got your Antrim right. Sligo were well safe, so you were off on that one. Stevie, you went for Champions Armagh. You went for finalist Leash, so we all got those arseways, lads. But no, like,
we
no
all
one.
Did. We all we, did.
No, I'm surprised none of us went for Tip. You know, they're not really a league team, but like none of us would. We'd be forgiven for not going for Loud. You went for relegation, Offaly and Antrim. So, you know, Offaly denied you by a point on the last day, yeah. And Antrim went down. So, you know, we didn't cover ourselves in glory there. So, Division Two. I went for Champions Galway, which will probably happen. They are maybe in the top three teams in the country after all. And finalist Cork. Cork were a big letdown in the league.
Absolutely.
And I went relegation Clare and Down, so I got neither of those right. Down saved themselves with a point in the last minute, so don't feel too bad about that. So only got one out of three there. Conan, you went for Galway champions, you went for finalist Derry, which is one of the all time classics.
Derry were a big letdown in the league.
I tell you, we talk about blinkered ex players. We're proving ourselves to be fairly blinkered here on these show with predictions. And relegated, Conan, Kildare and Clare. Kildare are only the finalists.
Jesus.
Yeah. So,
killer.
Yeah, Stevie, you're
not
too much better here. You went for Champions Galway, you went for finalist Cork, and you went for Clare and Kildare. Kildare, same as Conan.
I also went for Kildare.
You're yeah. slagging me.
You also went for
you know
Kildare.
What that was on the back of that hammering that they received from Dublin.
Yeah, they were only. In fairness, you could forgive your Kildare prediction when they had. Lost to Dublin's third team at home in Newbridge the week before,
that's what it was,
and
yeah.
then come out the following week and hammer Meade away in Navan. Yeah. So, like, I mean, how are you meant to get a prediction right?
I think Derry caught us all by surprise.
No, that was expected.
Derry, yeah,
you're one down at the minute, Stevie. Me and Wooly both are
one down.
Three.
Yes,
Heroic, are you keeping the scores?
Yeah.
All right, good man, Conan. So now we get to Division One, the big one. I know Coy Conan's keeping the score here. He's very clever. I told him about this yesterday.
Is that right? He knows.
Yeah, he's going to win. So
I'll keep a score, lads.
I think we should actually leave it at this.
We'll leave it till next week.
So I went for Champions Tyrone and finalist Kerry. So I have one right there.
Not even Dublin, jeez.
No, I actually went because I thought Dublin actually might use the league for a bit of downtime, but like, you know, they're on the road for so long, they're going for three in a row. I thought they might have put all their eggs in the All-Ireland basket and not kind of, you know, put too much effort into the league, which could still be probably right. It's not like they took the league massively seriously. They experimented the whole way through the league.
Yeah.
So it's just that their squad is so bloody good. So I was kind of half right on Dublin, but Tyrone kind of a letdown halfway through the championship or through the league, lost their last three games. Conan here has a full house.
Oh, who did you
give
go?
Conan, really give Conan a round of applause. Oh, relegation, I went for Roscommon and Donegal, so I've got a lot of egg on my face with Donegal. I got sucked into this whole transition talk. So Roscommon I got right. Conan got every single one right. Well, we've got Dublin and Kerry in the final and Roscommon and Cavan to go down. So that's four. So that's a
in
really
fairness,
strong...
Very good, very good.
That was the favourites of all four of them.
If I'd known this, I wouldn't have started at the back and worked off. Yeah. I completely forgot about this.
Stevie needs three here in order to catch up on you.
He needs Stevie here. He needs three. And he's not going to get it. He's not going to get it. He went for Champions Tyrone, finalist Dublin, relegation Cavan and Donegal. Roscommon. Roscommon would stay up in Division 1.
The only reason I put in Donegal was the amount of retirements that they had and the experience that was leaving the squad. But
yeah.
They have had serious players coming in and, you know, taking up the mantle. So. Yeah.
Listen, Division 1 wasn't easy to call.
It was very
Stevie.
Unpredictable like, across the board. You know, but we'll see if Conan can come out on top this
What's
weekend.
What's the scores here, so Conan? We'll give you your moment in the sun here.
So I've got seven. let's move on.
You should have started at the bottom. And
yeah. Willie has six and Stevie has five.
But you know what?
Jeez, it was a close run thing in the end.
You know what? I'd prefer to be behind at half time. and come out
top
at the end.
This is though so we're not ending now.
Championship predictions.
Yeah, no one cares about the league, do they, Stevie?
No, no.
Yeah, listen, we're timing a run for the championship. Right, well, we'll talk about predictions here for this weekend. Obviously, huge games. We'll start with Division 4, and this is a very 50-50 game. Conan, do you have the odds there? For Westmeath and Wexford, I'm not sure you have the odds, but we'll talk until you do get them up. Westmeath and Wexford, I'd say it should be close. I know Westmeath are favourites. I think it could be something like 8 to 13 and 13 to 8 or something like that.
Westmeath for 8 to 11.
8 to 11.
11
and 11 to 8. Right, so who are we going for here? I think I've stuck with Westmeath the whole way through the championship and I don't see any, or the whole way through the league, and I don't see any reason why I'm going to change now.
Well, saying I predicted Limerick and Wexford, I'm going to changed my mind and go for Westmeath.
Ah, you didn't even have them getting that. You had them still marooned in Division 4.
It takes a great team to knock Limerick off their perch in Division 4.
No, I think Westmeath have proven that they are probably a class above the rest in that division.
And John Heslin is just a machine, lads. Yeah. And I think, and you have
Kieran Martin. He's the highest scorer in all the leagues, is he?
In all the leagues, by a mile. Now, he's too good for Division 4. We had him on the show last week. And he has Martin in there beside him, who is a great foil. He's a bull of a man. And when they play the system that they do, you know, you have a ball winners in there. Heslin can win it in the air anyway. And he's got unbelievable accuracy. And I think Westmeath, they're just too good, I think, for Wexford. Now, Wexford have a few tasty forwards as well, Ling and Banville and Brosnan and these fellas. So they are tasty, and Wexford won't fear Westmeath by any means because they're on a similar level.
Exactly.
But it is a tough one to call. There'll be no bragging if you get this one right or wrong. What do you think, Colin? You are our predictions king here.
Yeah,
has to be Westmeath. There's only one way to go.
Guaranteed Westmeath.
We all go down together. Guaranteed Wexford.
Did you see Sports U Live last night, Stevie? With Willie was presenting it, and Ronan Rugiara was on, and he put up that John Heslin tweet talking about Colin Cooper. Lovely tweet. And then Ronan Rugiara starts being a little bit cheeky, and he's like, well, would you have shown that if it was a Limerick forward? And Willie's like, yeah, do you think I'm from Westmeath or something? And he's like, yeah I did.
Roger thought I was from Westmeath, though. They show me no respect, those two fellas in that show.
I remember you played against them a few times. You passed the ball to their players, did you not?
the week before we were talking about players getting targeted, Johnny Sexton getting targeted, and I just said I'd throw in an experience of mine. And I wasn't even trying to brag here. I wasn't even suggesting inter-county level. I said at club level in Leash, now I used to get targeted. The two lads just started laughing. I said, what are you laughing at? I said, and Andy Reid went, you were never targeted. They have no, I don't think they've any idea I even played football or anything. I think they just think I'm a complete joker. Right, well, let's move on from that. Division 3, we're going to go for Tipperary and Louth. I think this is 2-1 and 1-2. This is Tipperary are strong favourites, and I can't see anything outside of a Tipperary win, especially the fact that it's in Croke Park and they've got plenty of experience there. They've a better team on paper, and they have the hurt of losing to Louth in an important game. And you know, I think that was a bit of a wake up call. So can't see Louth, but then again, Louth are on a roll, you know. So
yeah, see, the thing with Louth is they'll put in a performance when you don't expect them to, and
the result against Armagh would scare you off Louth, wouldn't it? The hammering they took off them.
Yeah, but they travelled to Tipperary and they got a result down there. You know, the reports were that Tipperary should have been 5 or 6 up after the first 10 minutes, but they weren't. And Louth, you know, weathered the storm and come out on top and got a very important victory, and that match gained their promotion. So you know, Louth will go in with confidence. It's a tough one to call, because you know, I did see Tipperary last week beat Armagh, but I'd say, you know, Louth on their day can certainly put it up to Tipperary, but on this occasion I'll slightly sway towards Tipperary.
Okay, Colin,
I think I'm getting very cocky here, lads. I'm going for a draw at 8-1.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, it's not a bad call. Yeah. I think one of the four could easily be a draw. What happens if it's a draw? Then it goes to extra time. We could have a free taking competition. Wouldn't that be brilliant? That's how it's going to be decided.
That's brilliant.
We talked about that in the hurling show. So
as long as all frees are off the ground.
I'm not sure the technical ruling of that. I don't think they are all off the ground. I think they are off the hands. Yeah, well, you couldn't have full backs trying to take them off the ground or anything like that.
You couldn't have some corner forwards trying to take them off the ground either, do we?
Imagine
the coach nowadays.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's
everything's
true.
Out of the hands.
You swapped them around. You went a little bit of both, a bit like Dean Rock, didn't you?
Mainly off the ground.
Mainly off the ground. Yeah, but yeah, you
mainly off the ground. And the only time I went for out of my hands was when, you know, conditions were against me. My preferred choice was always off the ground. I would say 90% of what I kicked was off the ground.
It was only towards the end of your career you really took over the frees with Oisin there. He was he mixed it up too, off the ground and off. He went off his hands towards the end of his career.
Oisin mixed it up simply because he had slip discs in his back,
right,
and he had to, you know, revert to taking them out of his hands. But if he was given the choice, he would have been off the ground as well. Certainly when somebody is as good as Oisin kicking frees, you know, you're never going to get in front of him. So
and that's
happy enough.
And when Oisin came in first, did he just get installed as a free taker when you would be younger than Oisin?
I'm about 5 years younger than Oisin.
So he Yeah, it was a phase of five, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
I didn't think there was that much. We're the same age, obviously, because we played under 21 that year with another year left.
I would say you're older than me, Wally.
Okay. But there was never a question you were taking the freeze when you got in. It was never even up for debate. Did you practice them together even, or was it? Did you even get to practice them?
We had a team full of quality free takers. You know, Cal O'Rourke, the other side, Paddy McKeever as well. We all practiced, but you know, there was the main free takers, and you know, we valued what Oisin brought to it, and there was certainly in our team nobody as good under extreme pressure kicking balls over the bar from a dead ball situation than what Oisin was. So
he's good under pressure, isn't he? He won that MasterChef in the end, didn't he?
He won MasterChef.
Like, isn't he some competitor? Like, I mean, and the one thing about Oisin,
he didn't win. He got to the final.
But this was almost like a Leicester City kind of achievement. He hadn't a notion. His mother cooked for him all his life. He only started cooking 3 weeks
done
before.
Absolutely everything for him all his life.
Yeah, she was on that documentary. But what Oisin was brilliant at, and like, I watch a lot of cooking programs, I love them.
Yeah.
And it's always about, they always panic towards the end. It's always a big panic and they get things wrong. Oisin didn't panic one bit. He was organised. He had all his food on his table, organised in a nice little system. He never panicked. He followed the recipe and he's able to get to the final.
Like a free kick routine.
This fella's performed at that level. This cooking, come on, give me a break. This is not like, and he was so relaxed the whole way through it that I think a lot of that cooking, like, if you can't follow, maybe I'm going to be lynched by cooks all over the country, but if you can't follow a bloody recipe, you don't have to make it up off your head, you just follow it. Like, they're all bottling it from the pressure.
It's certainly not that straightforward, I wouldn't imagine. But
Oisin had
a great line the very first show. You know, he was talking about his wife, and he says, "She cooks, I eat." He really didn't cook.
He really is from the old school, because, like, I mean, I cook at home. Most men now will help out and do some bit of cooking, but he said you don't do that. You're from the old school. But Oisin actually went, it's real proper old school Ireland. You go from being fed by your mother, and then you get married and you get fed by your wife. So he literally never cooked for himself. Anyways, he gets to the final. Congratulations, Oisin. I want to bring Oisin on a Sports Show live show and do some sort of cooking tasting test or something. We'll do one up. I think we're going to do an Ulster live show.
An
Ulster Fry show. Right, where are we here? Division 2. I'll go here, obviously I have to stick with my team, potential All-Ireland champions in the next 3 years. This is arguably the game. Do you know what? It's actually, looking forward to games wise, I would go Division 3 last, Division 4 next, Division 2, Division 1, as in order of how I'm looking forward to the game. Loud Tipperary isn't really stirring my emotions up all that much, but this one definitely is, because there are two teams that are trying to break into the top, you know, the top tier of teams. I think Galway are better placed to do it. I think the last week's game will have no bearing on this whatsoever, because Kildare changed their team a lot. The pressure's off Galway now. They're into Division 1. It's in Croke Park. Open spaces, teams. We analysed these enough last week. Score loads of goals. Have lovely systems of play. This is going to be a cracker of a game. I'm going to go for Galway. I'm sticking with Galway. I've been loyal to them the whole way through the league.
We know how much you love this particular Galway team, but you know, Galway are travelling to Croke Park, and they certainly have to exercise the demons of their last performance there. So, you know, this is a great opportunity for them pre-championship to go and you know, rectify that. And I believe that they are too good, too strong for Kildare. Kildare's a fantastic team, some brilliant talent coming through, and they're well managed by Kieran O'Neill. But I think on this particular occasion, the wide spaces of Croke Park will suit this particular Galway team.
Okay, Conan. We're agreeing a lot here. Have we agreed on every one so far?
I went for a draw.
Oh, you went for a draw.
Who did you go for Division 3? You two?
Tipperary. Right, well, we're back. We're up to Division 1 here now, and it's obviously Dublin and Kerry. Do we have odds for Galway and Kildare?
Yeah, well, 10 to 11 for Galway, 65 for Kildare.
That's fairly obvious. Yeah. It's almost even money. It's very hard to call that one. Right, Dublin, Kerry, what are we going with for odds here? We might throw a handicap into this one. Do you know how to get handicap bets up there?
Under pressure here now. It was Dublin 49 and 12-5 for Kerry. 8-1 again for a draw.
8-1 is standard for a draw.
Dublin minus 2 is 10-11.
Good man.
Dublin minus 2 is 10-11. Listen, boys, if I'm a betting man, which we are because we do an accumulator section, I'd go for Dublin minus 2 there.
Okay.
Kerry plus 2, 11-10, obviously. Would you fancy that?
No, I told you what I'm going for, Colin. It's my first answer and I'm going to stick to it. Stevie, you're deep in thought there.
My prediction for this game is Kerry at 12-5.
Kerry is a straight win.
Kerry straight win 12-5. I think it's fantastic odds for them. They've come close this year.
It is huge. It's 2.5 to 1.
Dublin are the benchmark, and yes, they are the best team in the country, but four teams in the league campaign have come extremely close to beating them. You know, Donegal.
Not
Tyrone.
Dublin's full team, though, Stevie.
No, exactly.
Will they all the big guns be back in on Sunday? Like, you
Kerry,
know, they will.
Kerry are another one of those teams who have come close, and Kerry have the talent and the ability and the belief. And I fancy them this weekend. Will they win the All Ireland? I'm not too sure, but I certainly fancy them to pip Dublin this weekend and take Dublin's run to an end.
Okay, very good. Colin, we leave the last word to our predictions king.
I'm going for Dublin, and my risks are in Division 3 with a draw. If you put that into the accumulator with the three favourites, you get 42-1.
Jesus. Yeah, well, a draw will do that for you. There's no doubt about that. So what are you going for there? I missed that with all your
Rambling.
Who are you going for?
Westmeath, Galway, Dublin, and a draw in Division 3.
Just a straight Dublin win?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right, well, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. Say we must be very close to the hour there. And like I said, on Monday we'll do two different shows. We'll have Stevie in for one and we'll have Keane in for the other. Me and Conan are going to slog away through two, and we'll see you on Monday. Good luck.
Yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.